This is a production of Cornell University.
Those are all things that serve our clients and that kind of training. I think we have the same level of representation. In the second section, the big concern there under advisors and support persons is that we would no longer have the ability to speak during the proceedings. Our clients are often very nervous students, and being able to speak on their behalf and support them during the process makes it a lot more makes the process a lot more fair for them, because they can't always clearly express themselves given the level of anxiety that they experience. But also, I think because the JA's office would be able to speak during hearings, our concern is that this would also create inequity where our students would not be able to have someone speaking on their behalf, but the university would be represented. My understanding, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is that the JA's office is also supportive of this staying the same. So those are just the high-level concerns. I'm happy to answer any questions or clarify any of that.
Yeah, I said things very carefully when you took them on. You took very nice, so very well thought out. I don't see it from my point of view any difficult at all.
Sure. I was going to say exactly the same thing.
We 100% agree. I think there are times when respondents are complacent and they're cross-complacent with both our office and their office. And so what I would like to do is you get the advocate of supporting the JCC's recommendations, but saying that complacent advisors should be expanded to the code process and not just the 6.4 process, would be, I think, a stronger recommendation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think we subject to that.
I just want to clarify in terms of the concerns from the JCC. Is this strictly on the procedural material that we haven't yet gotten to yet? I wasn't worried for other things on the discussion that we're looking at so far.
Are you saying have you discussed this already as a committee or?
No. Is this within the first section of the draft?
It seems to be strictly on procedures, and I just want to make sure I'm clear on that. You don't have something else to add.
No, it doesn't matter.
Okay.
Sorry, I don't understand.
Which we haven't discussed,
but I think these are all very good.
No, they don't refer to them until the procedural section at the office of the.
Okay, we don't have any of that.
No.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The name only comes in the procedural part. So I do have a question, and this is something that I think the committee should really consider. In 2018, we actually passed, the University Assembly itself passed a resolution to incorporate the Office of Complaints Advisors inside of our charter, and that was rejected by the president. And that's cause for concern for me, because if the University Assembly itself does not have oversight of who becomes a complainant's advisor, but we only have oversight of who becomes a JCC, that's an incongruity that I think procedurally needs to be reconciled. And so possibly this kind of context is really important for us to consider as to what the president is thinking and to how to effectively be able to craft something that is understanding of that. Maybe it's of that time, the way the resolution was phrased only applied to that 6.4 process, mm-hmm. but she didn't even want it to apply to the 6.4 process itself. Like, she didn't want the university assembly involved in that process. So it's not going so much as a question, but it's a statement of concern that if we're not able to get the Office of Complainants Advisors to be codified within the University Assembly Charter, then how do we set up a system to get a complainant's advisor, and is this the only avenue that we're seeing it? So I'm just raising a concern to the whole committee and raising a concern to the JCCs to think about if our complainant's advisors are not being vetted by the UA, how do we make sure that there is fundamental fairness for both complainants and respondents in the process?
Did the president indicate what her concern was?
So while you noted in line 42 through 47 of the resolution, the UA consulted with a student in the CA office about this proposal, there seems to be a miscommunication because neither complainants advisors or the formal faculty advisor support the changes that were incorporated. So possibly it might have been the resolution was written too hastily, but I do just want to bring that out so we can make sure that when we do think about this in the grand context, we're actually making sense of it. Then I have a question, sorry.
Yeah, sure.
Do, and this is another question for the committee, and maybe it's just something I'm uncomfortable with, is it appropriate for the JCC to continue representing staff and faculty in the 6.4 process and not a separate office, and not a different set of offices that does functionally the same thing, but allows it to be more tailored to the place or to the setting of faculty and staff, whereas the JCCs deal primarily with students first, and primarily we could set up an opportunity with the JCCs for not only focusing on a respondent like advocacy role, but also a respondent developmental role. So I guess that's my question, because obviously it's the whole entire purpose of this rewrite of the code is to provide educational opportunities. Educational opportunities can come from the JCC's office as well with the respondents. And so I do wonder if it's more appropriate for the university to take the burden of finding a way for staff and faculty to be represented in the process of 6.4.
I think what I would say is, I mean, I'd be curious what the specific concern is, but it doesn't come up very frequently. I mean, it's just, it gives staff and faculty who might, you know, for resource reasons or whatever their personal situation might be, access to a fair process that's cost-free, and I think that's really important to offer to every member of the community.
No.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was thinking of a similar process exclusively, so it's basically just the JCC for the staff and faculty, because I do worry, I think, in the long run of this process, the incongruencies that we are placing upon the JCC. If we're saying in the Student Code of Conduct that the JCCs will be representing students in conduct cases, but in conduct cases for faculty and staff they're not, then that's a concern for me, and, but if they're still in the 6.4 Earth arena. So I'm worrying about all of this in a large scale effect of what work are we placing upon the JCCs. That is it fair for your office not to represent faculty and staff in conduct aid cases with their HR rep, but it is fair to have them in the 6.4 arena? So I guess I'm concerned by that, and maybe it can be squared in another way, but I'm just kind of offering the question.
I guess I'm not clear on what the precise concern is. Is it a workload concern? Is it?
I think it's a workload, but I also think it's just like a fairness concern. Because again, when we're dealing with separate systems, the systems need to be aligned because there's still going to be an unequal balance no matter what. If we're providing one avenue but not another avenue for respondents to have an advocacy unit.
I guess what I would say, and feel free if anyone else to jump in, but I think, you know, I understand your earlier concern about making sure that this committee has oversight of, is involved in 6.4 in some way. But I do think it's important to remember that these are really different policies and different systems. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that it's necessary that they be treated the exact same way.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I would just worry about, and I'd be concerned that there wouldn't be another resource provided if we were removed from the process, and that would be unfair to faculty and staff who might need that,
obviously.
Christian?
Well, I have two questions. One is, can you come back when we do this?
Sure, yeah.
Great. The second is, the workload thing, I mean, that was, you identified it as a joke. I think the number of appointees we can make is in the code. And you said before, you were somebody, that the workload is really heavy.
We have an extra person here.
Do you have an extra person?
It's great. I think it's steady for sure, but I wouldn't say that we're overwhelmed.
But you're not overwhelmed. But we should revisit that too. When we come to that point, because that's a straitjacket. We meant to make sure we get the right number of employees. Otherwise,
I should make a comment that actually looked at this issue that's being addressed right now, but just in terms of future work on this, which we can't do right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, if, as under the current code, most if something's an employment-related issue, it's not coming under the code. So I think clarifying that in a more sharp way with the revisions we're making. And so if you have an employment-related issue for staff or faculty, that's going to be adjudicated in some way. Now, I'm not talking about 6.4. Just generally, employment-related, my hope in the way that we've revised this so far is that there will be done some more work somewhere, not here necessarily, but could be here, somewhere we'll do more work to make sure that there's good, solid due process, including representation for faculty and staff when they are facing the potential for discipline under employment-related issues. Mm-hmm. So it seems to me that's the broader question, but we're not going to be able to address that here or now. Mm-hmm. And for 6.4, we have the same kinds of questions, but again, that's not really in our purview. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really good to have it put on the table so we can say if what we're trying to do is to create good systems of due process wherever somebody is facing the potential for discipline, whether you're a student or a staff member or a faculty member, what do you want to include as basic elements?
All right. So I think this is something that we'll probably spend a good amount of time thinking about during, especially our break, before we really start digging into the procedural section. Thank you. I think that's really helpful for us to consider. And very important, especially when it comes to the confusion regarding the name itself. Mm-hmm. I say that we move on to looking at our draft. If it's possible, do you have a pull up the Google Doc? Which is part of the problem, yeah, we had last time. It was all consolidated.
Section 1, 2, and 3, draft code. Well, we're right at the top right now.
My
impression is that we were going to start voting on pieces.
There are a few things that we need to discuss that we didn't have quorum, and it's just recommendations, so I'd say that we go through and look at the areas in blue first.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I forgot to write that. That's the thing about being overrunned. Yeah, I forgot.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to rewrite that first one about the Q's and A's. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do it for that.
You know where?
I don't think that's the
right
one.
Oh, you're not on the right document. It's called section 1, 2, 3, draft code version.
I may not have it. Can you add me to the...
Yeah, let me resend it to you. I just sent it to your email.
Richard and I were actually in favor of just getting rid of it completely.
Yeah.
But as kind of a fallback position in terms of what those people were saying was, in order to avoid this being something where there's a lot of, you know, potential messiness of charges that are broad and very difficult to kind of sort out when you have speakers come to events where it's really unclear exactly who's getting called on in what way. Mm-hmm. So this is more of, as I was saying, kind of a hortatory, aspirational kind of position to say, we move from the mandatory you should not to this is what the inviting group should seek to do. Because that's consistent with the earlier part of this provision that the organization should seek to arrange adequate space, et cetera.
Yeah, no, with those changes, I'm fine with this. It is aspirational. And it is, to the extent that the code of conduct is meant to describe an environment for the community, I think it's a good thing. In passages like this, you know, they do add bulk to the code. I think there's a supply in that. They do add bulk, and so simplifying the code is another aim. And so, if any time you have a paragraph like this, we should be thinking both ways. But I'm fine with this.
As said again, I think that this is part of creating a proposal. I think that speakers will limit opposite voices that they don't want to hear. I think that's kind of contrary to what it is, and I reiterate again that if this is something that the CJC wants to be enforceable, I need to have a clawback factor into this. So this really needs to be in the provision section of the definitions and not in the aspect of it now. So, you know, like I said, usually the way that I enforce these is through 2I2 of the code, which then takes you to Title 4, which harkens back to these things. And so, so we have a provision, so the CJC important to keep open speech, even unpopular speech, and we need to make sure that this goes into the definition. I don't think it's aspirational. I think it is something that we actually do function as a university.
Well, it seems to me that this is aspirational, as stated, and that there are provisions of the code that exist where if there is strong enough evidence to show that there's actually active discrimination going on, that it can be enforced using
a
separate provision. Or did I not understand that correctly?
No, so 2I2, which it says in the code, it says anything that's a violation of Title 4 is actually a Title 1, Title 3 violation. There's a provision in Title 4 that harkens back to the original Title 1. So we enforce it because it is a provision. And so,
so you're saying this isn't strong enough?
No, I think the idea of truncating a little bit, but I think that the original language in the code isn't bad, but I would recommend looking at Title 4 of the code. I think those provisions are too strong. But if we even had something broad, say, you know, reasonable person, yeah, I think that what I do with this is if we're saying that if a university organization is using funds that have been protected by the university, provided by the university, and we're saying that the students can then discriminate against persons they don't want to hear the voice of. Right? So let's imagine, let's say, we have a feminist speaker come, and there's a lot of men who want to share their perspective, and she doesn't call on those people, right? We're not having the exchange of discourse. And so when we talk about Q&A sessions, you know, the moderator is responsible for making sure that there's a broad range of opinions shared. And so I do think that when we talk about the importance of First Amendment on our campus, these provisions, I think, are really strong deterrents, and these get talked about when you've got managers open a session that's going to be possibly problematic. So usually the day attendant or one of the management folks will say, you know, as a reminder, here is our expectations of the community. They talk about the actual code provision. So it is something that we use a lot, and I think the reason that we don't have a lot of cases with those is because our community members understand that it is a place for discourse.
I understand that, but I want to know then how would you recommend that we change this particular paragraph? You're saying not at all, that this right now is okay, and we just need to make sure that in the later section under procedures we're going to have something that takes us back to this? Well, I mean, how would you change that sentence?
I would look at the original code language. Yeah, I think whatever's in the current code is fine, and working from there. When it comes to some of those First Amendment things, so I think what would be my recommended idea is that anything that deals with the First Amendment aspect of the code, we put in a separate appendix, and then we link. It would be a violation of Appendix A to go from there. So a lot of the First Amendment stuff is good; it can be truncated, but I do think that the current language is decent. I haven't looked at it in depth. I just.
So I'm, you know, I hear Michelle critique of this. There are really two kinds of three separate issues that I see. One is that freedom of speech can be individual and it can be organizational. That's the first. And an organization should have these things. A right within limits and within community standards and so on, like it is, to conduct its own proceedings and its own invited speakers. That seems to me like one of my favorite. The individual freedoms of people standing in the queue to ask questions or standing up to an audience, that is also potentially a freedom of speech. Seems to me it's secondary once you protect the organization with this provision. And that's the third thing, which is as an aspirational provision, I mean, this is a matter for the community to for example, you have a speaker, you discriminate in who's recognized. People can cite this passage as being, you know, a community standard, but we don't litigate it. I'm really afraid in the situations where you litigate two kinds of rights, freedom of speech rights, then you're going to get into a lot of trouble. And it's better to, it's better in this case than if it's leaning towards the organization.
Yeah. So I just have a organizational question on this point, because I believe how I read this, it looks like it's trying to be read as a yet it's aspirational, so that would mean it's not a violation, because there's a separate violation section. So here, it wouldn't be, like, in our view, in this code organization, is that a violation? Because to me, if it's laid inside of the introduction of this code, it's not a violation, it's just an aspirational thing. So it's not like the JA's office could even try to bring a case against those students. So I guess my thing is, you know, if we're concerned about it being a violation, it would have to, like, I mean, just from a simplicity standpoint, if we want it to be a violation, place it in a violation, but if not, mm-hmm. then it's not actionable by the JA's office, and that's just how I read it.
It should be moved.
So I think it should either be deleted from the second and in there, or aspirational.
It is my preference that it's kept aspirational, so it's kept in the introduction, however, like, I just want to raise the point.
Could I just ask a clarification? Michelle, what I'm looking at the current code, what was the provision that you said refers generally to something else, which then brings in the principles? You said, was it
212? 212. So it is on page.
Is it under violation 2I2?
Yeah, it's on page 18, so it says to commit a violation of Article 2 of Title 4.
Okay.
So then you go to Title 4.
Which one's Title
4? It starts on page... Starts on page 34. No, it starts on page... Starts on page 37. So then, when you look under Article 2 of that it talks about, this is the idea of, like, disrupting freedom of speech, things of that nature, so they identify officials. And then on number 9, it says to fail to comply with any time, place, and manner regulation authorized by Article 3 of Title 1. So then you go back to Title 1 and Title 3, which is where these provisions are.
Oh, if it's time, place, and manner specific in Title 1.
Right, but Article 3, which is where all the stuff is. So you go from Article Title 3 to 4 to 1. To
yeah, yeah. No, but I'm saying is this is the time, place, and manner regulation. It's different from what we're talking about.
It is, but I think it does talk about the manner, right? It talks about the manner of the question and answer.
So, if there's no further discussion, I'm going to call for a vote. So, all in favor of adopting this language?
Changes in favor.
Okay. Any opposed? So, everybody seems to be unanimous. And I'm going to abstain. So, this has been adopted.
Yeah. Is that me?
Yep.
No, Reza.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever's doing it.
I think Logan's on it.
I'm on it.
Okay.
I'm just trying to figure out. Okay. Nope. That wouldn't do it.
I could never figure it out.
I stopped the highlights button when I was saying no. So then, We're going to move on.
And change color to black?
Yeah. This is part of your address.
Yeah. Okay. Like some protests is another table kind of official thing.
Yeah.
Some students, some protests do sometimes.
Okay.
But
so good.
Most of ours are already known by administrators when they do protests.
Okay.
We don't do things like non-registered.
And then you've got
I think the fundamental
is not too
much.
Right,
that's why we still have that permit. So now we're going to quickly consider this language. There was no objection from the non-quorum group, so it wasn't actually voted or discussed by the entire CJC. This was just from last week. Does somebody want to speak to this and what was changed or added?
Just to be adopted.
I actually have a question.
Yeah.
Real quick about allowing public address systems in amplified sound. We permitted other algorithm solutions and require prior approval. So is the prior approval from like the department that the building is from? Or is that the approval from?
It's the next step.
The event registration.
And there'll be a link in the very end for all that stuff.
Can I this came out of the outdoor space working group. So this is the language that's in the code now that came in on them.
Okay, so without hearing, the sun is going to go black for now. Okay, so here. Wait, did you want to talk about the
symbolic structure?
Yeah.
Yeah, so where it's yellow, where it says text needs to be added, hopefully we can take that out. What I did was just take some of this language about symbolic structure. Well, this language is symbolic structures is some of the language from the current code, but a lot shorter. I just basically put the beginning of it. To me, it was a good idea to something in here about them.
So what is that?
Well, like during the anti-apartheid movement, the Dennis movement, there was a shanty town that was built right next to Day Hall, which was fantastic. And it had like a library, you know, which was like an anti-oppressive library, and people were sleeping in it, and the streets didn't like that. And it, you know, so they basically brought in the backhoes and but it was very controversial. So that's an example of a symbolic structure. Basically building something.
I did leave something by accident here. Is that regulation?
Should be able to undo it under edit.
Right at the bottom is that the link?
Oh, that was the link, and I thought we should remove it. But this may be the link that goes to nowhere. I can't remember. There were some links that just weren't working. There's two links there. I can't remember.
I think you said this one went to nowhere.
Okay. So did I say, yeah, you have two ones, the new story one.
Okay, so I'd like to read out this part in the back of the should I also delete the link?
Yeah.
And then just leave this part so everyone knows that's going to still be added?
We said we weren't going to add the link until
at the very end of the
document. So maybe can be found at policy at our down with the outdoor space working group policy, or
Yeah, so with your recommendation of the recess culture,
it was so good of all of it. I think actually there's a lot of structured stuff when I went through. I don't think the outdoor space working group actually worked on that. Turned out.
Okay.
So, I get that.
I'm moving to the yellow paragraph.
Yeah, I said it was worth voting on. So, seconded, is there any more discussion about removing the paragraph that I have highlighted right now? If not, I'm going to call for a vote. So, all in favor of removing this paragraph? All right. Any opposed? And then I'm going to abstain. And that has been removed.
James is in favor.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Over here now, I think that the only changes are the ones in blue, correct, Richard? Yes, so it's agreeable to the non-quorum committee. So this one's a bit easier just to look over very minor changes. So if anybody has any problems, please bring them up. Otherwise, I'll give everyone a second to read it and. If there's no objection, we're just going to switch it to black and keep moving. Okay, moving on. Okay. And then whose language was?
This is what I put in, which is kind of like current.
Okay.
But there's more in the current code, I think. But
shortened.
Okay. Just a suggestion, if it's something like this, if there's no objection, you just move on.
So yeah, I'm just giving everyone like a second to read it, and if there's no objection, we're just going to move on because we're. I say we're to keep moving forward unless we have a dissent or something. I think it's better just to vote at the end in the favor, and that's what we've agreed on in prior meetings. So has everyone had a chance to look at this and with hearing no objections, I'm also going to change that to black. And then we're going to move over here.
So I see that your comments recommend that text, the second paragraph, be wholly removed. Is that still the recommendation? Because I actually prefer for that to be kept in, and I think I understand the rationale. I think the rationale of that paragraph being kept in is something of the situation that happened at the University of Virginia, in which the president should take responsibility for the overall campus community in those instances. And I think the clause of it is not intended to exercise authority on individual cases is very clear in the sense that this is a very, very, like, rare instance, but in the case of something similar to the University of Virginia, the president should be held responsible for the overall welfare of the community, and if the president fails to do so, that would be something in which there's actual recourse by a shared governance to say, you did not do your job, which I think really is born out of the University of Virginia.
Anyone from last week's meeting have any comments regarding
that? I'm good with keeping it because I think it's clear that it's rare. I mean, I'm assuming that it probably was put in originally because of the late 60s. But I do think that there may be some instances, but I think it's all right.
Michelle?
I'm
Dan, just to clarify quickly, everything that says Logan, that was just me
writing
from. No, it's not. It wasn't me as an individual. It was talking. It was from the last year.
Okay.
I was just the one I'm keeping notes.
Okay.
It's only that yellow sentence is the only one that really bothers me.
Yeah, I think that the yellow sentence is
We were trying to figure out how to word it in such a way that, I would say that the president will not exercise this authority, such authority in cases involving individuals. I make it shall not. Because I can't imagine an instance in which the president would be using emergency powers against an individual. That doesn't.
I mean, I generally think that's true, but you could have something awful happen with an individual's micro.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this just says individual misconduct.
Yeah, but I'm going to hear it.
It doesn't say individual speech.
I was just writing.
The problem is that individual language is that just a criminal act. You know, the police are involved, the president's not involved, etc., and not in an extraordinary way. I don't like the idea that the president, in some circumstance, might use this authority against an individual.
I was reading it as saying that where there's an individual involved in an incident, that the president couldn't exercise this authority more broadly.
Yeah.
Sure.
So we're in agreement.
Okay. Yeah, it was related to that. Yeah, that it is individual cases of staff, faculty, students, or students. Right. We're not that. What we're talking about is the prison's not going to get involved with individual cases anywhere with anybody.
That's what I mean.
Who is a faculty or staff?
And we've had
like in terms of
so technically Title IV of the code allows the president to adjudicate the cases of any person on the campus, invitee, licensee, student, faculty, staff member. So if Beyonce comes and Beyonce is smoking weed on campus, the president can technically adjudicate that case.
Oh.
Yeah.
So then why are we saying that they aren't intended to exercise authority? If another document says that they do have that authority, the president does have that authority.
This is maintaining public order.
Yeah.
Okay. The code breaks inside itself, and so there's parts of it that don't kind of make sense and don't continue to make sense and contradict itself. So these are the questions that we as a committee have to ask.
Mm-hmm.
I think, as Richard said, if there's any sort of public disorder on campus, police are involved and can be handled under that provision. But and being a private institution, right, we have a lot more leeway to restrain someone from coming to our campus because we're not public property. So if there was ever, an interesting situation with a licensee or an invitee, I trust that the UPD and the police will handle it.
I've changed my mind. I'm more in favor of getting rid of the whole thing now. Because of the placement, in particular with regards to protests and demonstrations. I would just get rid of it.
I move to get rid of it.
So we have that one bullet under scope of presidential responsibility.
This entire paragraph?
Right, because then that just
seems silly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Richard has moved to get rid of this entire paragraph, correct? Is there a second? Okay, second for Jen. So any further discussion? I'm going to give everyone like a good 10 to 15 seconds to read over the paragraph again.
And to make sure I understand, the president does have authority even if we remove this.
Well, it depends on if you're keeping Title IV of the code in this draft, right? So that's the issue. We haven't gotten to that part because it's in the definition provision.
But I can tell you I have not experienced one instance where the president actually used this power because he used to be him. And the idea of having your president adjudicate something in your code of conduct is extremely strange.
Yeah.
Alright, so I'm gonna go vote. All in favor of removing this entire paragraph altogether?
In favor.
Sorry, are we on section three scope?
Yeah. We're on scope, I need one, two, third paragraph.
I just want to talk about A, and this is where the draft procedures provided to us and the code it actually contradicts itself. I just want to notice for the record, in the procedures that council provided to us, they talk about this part where it says determination of whether conduct is subject to this code will be made by the JA in consultation with the Dean of Students and the Code and Judicial Committee.
Mm-hmm.
This is a radical change that I would like this committee to be aware of. I'm not in support of that. And then it does seem like fraternities and sororities are being brought under the scope of this, and we haven't had a conversation of whether we support that.
Mm-hmm.
Because from an administrative point of view, that would be a very different system, and so I want to make sure that before we quickly like approve this on a whole, we at least have some recognition with those two provisions would be.
Yeah.
Okay.
It seems strange that the Code and Judicial Committee would be in this paragraph.
Yeah, I guess I'm of the opinion that paragraph, so I'm in support of, I guess, the wording language, the determination of whether conduct is subject to the code is made in those intense special circumstances so that the CJC is looped into any extraordinary, reach of a conduct violation. So it's something that, you know, if you read it and you're like, how does this apply, the CJC has the ability to ask that question, which I think is important in an oversight capacity, and I think is actually a failure of the UA in the past of not actually understanding the consequences of some of these conduct actions. So I'm in support of that. I'm not in support of bringing the fraternity and sorority under this current code at this time. I think that
mm-hmm.
there's a separate process at play, but I'm in support of the determination. I think if we want to reword it to make it in those really rare instances, that's, I think, what the intent behind it is. But in every instance, I would say that's too much and would bog people down.
Michelle, can you point us to the current code with regard to this issue of determination whether conduct is subject to this code will be made by?
So the only time where it talks about, so the check on the authority of the judicial ministry is by the hearing board. The only time in which the Dean of Students plays a role is if I'm requesting off-campus jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
The Dean of the Faculty and the Vice President of HR play that same role as the faculty or staff case. And so this is saying that if it's trying to have that serious enough off-campus jurisdiction, I think the language in the code where it talks about whether behavior, I think that's a stronger thing, but this almost makes it seem like every case before I send a notice letter, I have to consult CJC
mm-hmm.
and the Dean of Students.
That's what it sounds like to me,
And when it comes to fraternities and sororities, I think, especially since I've gotten here, I think the fact that fraternities and sororities are under their own system is not doing a job of keeping our students safe and equitably. The reason why I support the current system is because their burden of proof is more in line with the best practices of the field in which it keeps our students safer. I know that one of the things that we have not seen in the draft is what the standard of proof was going to be. And so if the standard of proof stays as it currently is with clear and convincing, I don't think that we're doing a campus of safety service if we keep attorney and sorority life under there. But if we move to the best practices of being preponderance of evidence for all student conduct, which we do with almost everything else on this campus, then I do agree that fraternity and sorority should be under the code. So.
On the other hand, I think it's a major issue for the Cornell community to decide in open discussion of the code. So I keep it in. I agree with Michelle that standard of proof should be, it's rare, I think it should be higher. So when we get to procedures,
she
wants to be lower. I want it to be higher. So anyway, they agree with the side that the procedure later. I think it's a major issue for the Cornell community. We just had the death, and there's a police investigation that happened, 17 witnesses, so forth and so on. I mean, the grief person has not shown much ability to
to regulate it still. I think it is a major issue for the Cornell community. So I agree with Joe that we can't specify what it would look like yet, but leaving it in there for open discussion to see what the Cornell community thinks about it, I think that's a good idea. That kid died. I mean, it's not a trivial issue. It's pretty hot.
Lisa, did you have your hand
up? I did, but I think briefly wanted to be on record as saying we wouldn't support the standard of proof being lowered for campus code.
Yes, I have a couple things. one is we had talked earlier about wanting to make sure that the judicial administrator is independent. Right, when we were talking about whether to bring the student code under the whatever it's called. What is it? Council of Student Line. So it seems to me that the judicial administrator should be independent. I think we should eliminate that sentence completely, or that's why I was wondering if we have current language that says something like this, or if it is understood that it's the judicial administrator that has the decision, except in unusual circumstances of all the cases coming up.
Yeah, I am responsible for the decision of all.
No, I understand.
Yeah.
But is it in the code? Does it say that is what I'm asking?
It does in the code where it says off-campus jurisdiction. That's what it talks about the only time that the...
Okay, so it's the distinction made when we're talking about off-campus jurisdiction. So it seems to me we might, that we could eliminate the sentence completely. I really worry a judicial administrator that is independent, which is why we had that long discussion before. Doesn't mean I'm always going to agree with the way the code is administered by the judicial administrator, but I just don't see this consultation piece here. It's way overbroad. And I'm fine with keeping the sororities, fraternities, other student organizations for the reasons that Richard said, and I'm completely against using a preponderance of evidence as opposed to clear and convincing. I mean, you can put the label best practices on things, saying most people do that, therefore it's best. But I think it's best practice to have a strong burden of proof and to be willing to actually impose it, including, you know, imposing the code on sorority attorneys, etc.
Yeah. Joe?
I'm going to agree with Michelle. At the current state, I do believe the preponderance. I believe we should lower the standard of proof. Because I think it would keep our students in the state capacity possible. And that is why I don't support the fraternities and sororities being lumped into the scope at this moment. And I see that is still issue fundamentally linked. And that's kind of just where I stand on that issue, and I think I've been saying it since I got onto the university assembly. And I think it also applies to, you know, it allows us to standardize our harassment protocols for students. If you're harassed based on your race, you have a higher standard of proof you need to prove than you are based on your gender under the policy 6.4 process, and I think that's fundamentally unfair at this current state, and that's why I propose, but I think that's a separate issue, but I think everything on that conversation is linked together.
Yeah,
I wanted to echo both Rita and Richard's statements on writing in Greek lines. I think it's important, that's why I think as well. When 33% of like unwanted touchings consensual touchings are happening in fraternity houses or fraternity annexes on campus, I think that there's an issue. I think there's an issue with racism and anti-blackness, especially if you die recently. I don't think it's something to take lightly.
Question?
First,
you're
going to
have
to request that sentence beginning determination of whether conduct, if we struck in consultation with dean and students and come to the judicial committee. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, it sounds to me like getting rid of it, the default position is it's a judicial administrator.
Yeah.
We have to say it's off campus. We have an occupying opinion.
Yeah.
And then
Rita.
You
have I just want to point out that one way of creating consistency is to raise the burden proof.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you can go either way.
Right.
Yeah.
Ben?
We're not even at the burden of proof discussion right now, I don't think, but I think it's really important to know that how difficult it is to have a high standard of proof in college-level violations, and that clear and convincing is almost crippling to people that have to hear those cases. And I hope when we get to that point, we can have a really good discussion around that, because I think it's so important. The education piece, keeping our students safe, clear and convincing, is really hard to get to.
Mm-hmm.
So,
taking out the paragraph. I mean, the sentence. Taking up. Mm-hmm. We can either take out the sentence, or we can take out that stuff in blue, or we could keep the sentence. So I move to amend Reese's motion to strike the sentence.
I didn't move anything.
Okay. Well, then let's just get rid of the consultation to judicial committee.
Isn't it a student code of conduct? Like,
no,
this is the campus code.
It's a campus code for really values, and then we move on to definitions, and the rest is really focusing on student conduct.
But the code provision is covering student
conduct.
Yeah. This is a prohibition.
Do we have enough dissent regarding grade five that you want to vote on whether we're including it right now in this paragraph? Yeah.
This is my first time in the meeting, but I really feel what you said about, like, the purpose of this committee is to create a safe space for students, and I think the fraternities and sororities sometimes are held in a context where these practices of abuse and harassing and based on race and gender and water, and I think it shouldn't be removed. They need to be held accountable for it. So that is what I think.
Laura, then
Joe. Sounds like we're talking about two different things. We're talking about taking out piece of a sentence on in consultation with the students and code and judicial committee, and that's one thing we should decide on, and then the second thing is whether we want to leave. So why don't we just separate those two and maybe make a vote on those two.
Yeah, let's do that. So I recommend that whoever wants to decide which one goes first makes the motion. But first, Jed, before.
I'll have Greg go first because that's the comment I'm going to go into. So I fundamentally do believe at the end of the day, pre-flight should be covered by this code of conduct. I think that the committee should first understand the current discrepancies of standard of proof and the current structure that the Greek judicial system utilizes, and see the level of similarities and level of dissimilarities it might have currently, and where those externalities are creating problems. I think at the end of the day, my goal as someone who does think Greek life on this campus has had too much of a reign, needs to be on this code of conduct, but I think for us to make the most informed decision, we need to know the current processes, and we need to have a fundamental, clear conversation about the standard of proof, because I believe in this moment that with the lower standard of proof in the Greek judicial space, we're actually holding that there's a possibility to hold them more accountable. It's just the actors in that judicial system are not fundamentally acting upon it yet. And so I think that they have the tools, but they don't have the builders yet to actually enforce accountability. So I think that needs to be a conversation inserted. But I want Greek life to be added in the code at the end of the day.
I feel like I'm sympathetic to this thing, but it sounds like, if I'm understanding correctly, that the Greek life system can have its own system, which is different from, or in addition to, supplements being under the code. If it's under the code, couldn't it say, well, we have our own system, we're going to punish people in a particular way? Or is that not correct?
So I used to work in Greek life, but I worked for my national headquarters and stuff like that. And so usually when you look at almost any other campus, Greek life is considered under the code, like a regular, like the Chuck Club, right? Was fighting the Checkers Club, right? Both would be under the code. So when they talk about self-governance in other campuses, it's for things that are within the Greek community that aren't covered by the code. So for example, recruitment rules. So if there's the idea that door decks can only be for 2 minutes, and then there's a group that does one for 3 minutes, that would be adjudicated within that system. And so everything that would be a violation, and this came out in 1989 because the University Board of Trustees chose to recognize and not register Greek organizations. And there's a lot of reasons behind that policy decision. So right now, anything that is a violation of anything of the campus standards of behaviors is adjudicated into that system. And so the idea of where you're looking at shared governance would be to say, you know, the university community does not care. Delta plus Delta goes an extra 10 minutes on a recruitment skip, right, because that's not a violation of the code, but that would be something that would be important for that community to continue to adjudicate within their rules.
Can I
just
follow up? So it sounds like if the Greek system is running the code, that it would not be concurrent with what the Greek system could do if it covers similar things.
It would be the same separate. So if there's...
Could they can't do both.
Right.
You're saying they would not be able to have their own code for individuals or...
So they could adjudicate anything that, so the code is the floor, right? So think about like our college athletes, right?
So that's what I'm having. Is this the floor, and then the Greek life could have its own system, which is more stringent.
But it couldn't adjudicate anything that was a violation of the code.
Mm-hmm. Well, then it's not floor.
No, we would be able to adjudicate
the code. The code would, but so the idea is like, think of athletes, right? So athletes are subject to the code of conduct, so if they were drinking underage, it would be adjudicated by the coach. So let's say the coach wants to say that before a game you have to be in bed by 10 o'clock. That's not a provision of the code, right? Mm-hmm. But they could be adjudicated under their team rules because that's an additional benefit. And so the right now what it is that the Greek system gets to create their own system, whatever it is that they choose to want to. And so the idea is if they were to come under the code, they'd be held standard to whatever mm-hmm. organization. And then if they wanted to do the additional rules, like recruitment rules or dirty rushing, right, that could be a different set of rules that they could do just within their community.
Right. So you could have two systems, one of which is actually more strict in certain areas because that wouldn't violate the code.
Right.
Yeah. So you still can do that. You still can have two systems. I think we should leave it. I'm still in favor of, you know, a higher burden proof. I think we can work that out later. But I certainly don't want to change the burden proof for everybody simply because we're worried about it for the reason of eternity.
Gavin.
Yeah. Going off what Joe said, if we're doing Greek life and doing sororities and fraternities later, which is changed to background or means more validity, and I understand that, and like a more pointed process. So on the other hand, and when Martha Pollard came to speak with us at the UA about the code, someone asked about fraternities and sororities, and she said, well, it doesn't get it written this time, like I still think it's important, but like mm-hmm. focus on like other things, and like I think that's unacceptable. So I think that like thank you for that. Also at the same time, I don't believe that should be the case. I think that pushing it to back burner only means that we will address it later this year into the code and not in further revisions in like next year, in later years.
Yeah, so I just wanted to mention that I think that it doesn't hurt to have the sentence mentioned to see what the public thinks. So I'm in agreement with, I think, a lot of people on that. And then we can revisit specifics that'll mainly go into the procedural section. This is also going to get sent back to us at the end of the day,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to have to rework this. So there is a chance that it gets removed, and there is a chance that administration comes back and tells us, we can't deal with that right now, or that they don't want us to deal with Greek life this year, and that's going to be a later goal. But I think for now, just having it in here to show that that is something that we're considering does send a message across campus, and I think that we'll get a lot of really strong opinions both ways, which will be really helpful for us. So I'm going to recommend, Laura.
I was going to say, I recommend that we keep fraternities and sororities here.
Is there a second? Second by Richard. Any further discussion? Okay, so all in favor of keeping for now? Okay, so I'm going to abstain and there's nobody else to vote. So, you know. Okay. So now let's go on to this highlighted paragraph, the in consultation with the Dean of Students and COVID Judicial Committee.
So I would move that we strike in consultation.
Where?
In consultation with the Dean of Students and the COVID Judicial Committee.
Okay. Right. Seconds. So, any discussion before we vote? Nope. So, all in favor of just removing that one paragraph? I mean, one sentence. Sorry. part of the sentence. Thank you. Any opposition? And I'm going to abstain. So, I'm going to delete. We're running into a problem where we have 3 minutes. So just a quick way to determine how we want to do this.
Can I explain the provision that I recommended it and the CJC can vote electronically before y'all need to send it to UA?
Yeah.
So I think that's the last chunk of what needs to be discussed.
Yeah, you're fantastic. Thank you.
The last meeting I was tasked with actually looking at this provision where it talked about really the intersection between the code and criminal matters. After I looked at it and I thought about what's actually been used since I've been here, which I know it's, you know, 3.5 years versus 30 years. But actually it could be summarized in one paragraph. And so I sent around a draft to folks. And it was sent out with Logan's agenda.
Yeah.
But basically it's just the idea that all you really need, in my opinion, is that first paragraph. The rest of it can be dismissed. And then I added the part about transcript notation. The first part where it just says, I added, however, the ability of your Cornell students out of right and the distinction separation from being a member of the community governed by laws. And the rest of it was just saying the same thing 16 different ways from Sunday. So I think I used the most concise language, but I kept the parts that really pushed the kind of public officials request that we hold our investigations. So we had like a massive Watson case a couple of years ago in which the FBI has requested that we hold our investigation. The second part when it comes to transcript notation, that is almost exactly from the registrar page. The only thing I added was temporary transcript notations, A, because we already have it in the code. And so because the transcript notation on the registrar page says anything that's already in the code, so since this would be a new put, I wanted to make it the same step.
So those were sent around, but they're not in here yet, right?
No. Right. So I can ask. Anybody can add those?
Yeah.
I don't know if we're not going to actually discuss something because I don't like reducing the provisions about the relationship with jurisdictions outside the university to one paragraph. I don't think it's sufficiently protective of students. And I don't like the language, the ability to be a Cornell student is not a right. In fact, we are treating it very much as a right with regard to provisions that protect people from, for example, expulsion, you know, without due process. So it depends on how you mean right. We are treating these as rights, whether they are, and they actually are legally enforceable in terms of contract stuff. So I think this is, I don't see how we can possibly agree on this in the space of 30 seconds.
Michelle, would you be able to put your changes in this document in another color?
Yes.
I mean, I think there might be ways to limit, you know, to reduce this to the verbiage,
which is what I thought we were going to get to, was more the limit instead of a complete, you know, excising of
yeah.
what's in here.
So, we want that to go to the UMA?
Before the next meeting.
The meeting is when?
The first week of December.
So, this is our March meeting before then?
Unless we have another meeting again.
I think we should have a retreat where we take
like from the beginning. Like if we could all get in a room for a chunk of hours,
mm-hmm.
and maybe it's—I don't know when. Maybe it's first thing, but it's really hard to do it in little pieces because
yeah.
we lose momentum, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we get lost in.
Yeah, and then
kind of way.
And there's like conversations that I'd love to have to like understand perspective, but I feel like we're constantly rushing through it. And I know everyone's busy and we can't do it right now, but that was just me then.
I agree. So I think that that's a good point. And it's been hard to get one of those days since we've been meeting almost every week, which is really unlike committees of the UA. And so thank you all. It's a lot more time than expected or than anyone signed up for. The only thing I can recommend is that we try to get a couple of hours in on Monday the 2nd, or if people want to meet on December 1st, which is a Sunday. Well, okay,
when is the meeting?
I'm not
on the 3rd.
Okay.
Would you be able to zoom in?
I'm going to be driving.
Okay. On Monday?
On Monday. Oh, Monday, I'll
be here. Okay, so I think that we should...
Can we meet tomorrow?
Oh, I can't.
I'm leaving. I need to go home after class.
Monday regular time.
But I think that we're going to probably need more than the hour and a half. So I think that we need to... consider that. I'm sorry, I'm looking at my calendar to make sure that I have my appointment on Monday until 6 p.m.
11 to 1?
I can do 10 to 2:30.
I could do 10 also to 1. I could do 10 to 11. 10 to 11?
Pretty good. 10 to 2. Good.
So it's most important that we have a quorum.
Yeah.
So of the people on the committee who can vote, who can
whoever,
be available.
Who
ten,
can make 10 to 2?
10 to 2.
You're
thinking about a 4-hour meeting?
Yeah.
Just in case. I know that that's going
to
be
I might need to leave early, but.
Okay.
I know. So
I'm at the end of coffee in 3 hours.
10 to 1.
10
I can
to
1.
I
can
do that.
Yeah, I think 3 hours.
Can we
get
lunch
first?
10 to
1. I'll have to talk to Wendy to see if I can get lunch. But I should be able to.
Well,
could
we do
later.
A bring our own lunch? I
mean, if it's
late to order.
I think we should see. I've ordered one we didn't get before. The games is fine.
I'm asking right now.
Okay.
Can someone
can
I
do
know.
10 to 1.
Okay, so, no, not the end. I need someone to move for a additional meeting on Monday, December 2nd. Gavin, Jen 2nd. So, all in favor? Any opposed?
I have to say, the UA's got to give us ribbons for this.
We're now set to meet December 2nd. From 10 to 1 p.m. And then do we have a motion to adjourn? Okay.
Return.
2:35. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you,
okay.
So it's going to
be a really bad day.
So it's for you to add within next week, just like in paragraphs, all your suggested like changes or comments. So that even if you're not here, we can all discuss. Are you busy the rest of the day that you wouldn't be able to come back or zoom in?
I am seeing if I can move my 11 and a half, but there's
okay.
Like a retirement party and then what communication about that.
Okay.
But you can put the comments to fill on into
that.
Yeah,
I
can.
Okay.
We have to give a
Is there like a university award for the most dedicated committee?
Actually, there are
awards, right? Well, it's all the lunches we get. I mean, I've never been fed more in my life.
Nice to meet you.
Welcome aboard.
Yes, I'm very happy to serve. We didn't make it far. It's hard to go through the entire thing in one day.
It was like when different members of our committee keep joining and like new people come, it's like I feel bad for them too.
Yeah.
We're all getting a lot of volunteering.
Right. That's the university is important.
It's part of the job.
Can I give Gina, can I give these to the students? What do you do with them?
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.